Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Coming up on Killer Jeans, episode 4 of our investigation into the case of Bianca Jones and DeAndre Lane.
I feel like I was being portrayed as a controlling, manipulative, violent, angry black man who was using everybody and didn't love any of his children. But if you look at the evidence clearly goes against it.
A Detroit police officer makes a staggering find.
That little girl in that house, that's the little girl that's missing.
And in a Killer Jeans exclusive, a new witness comes forward.
Only thing I remember seeing was a blanket over her and her drinking a bottle.
The following episode of Killer Jeans contains graphic and sensitive information and material. Listener discretion is advised.
Emmy-nominated true crime journalists bring you cases like you've never heard them before. Hear firsthand accounts from the victims' families, private investigators, lawyers, law enforcement, and even the convicted. Giving you a complete 360 of the case like no one else can.
I'm Melissa McCarty.
I'm Kelly McClear.
And this is Killer Jeans.
2-year-old Bianca Jones is missing in a carjacking, according to her father, DeAndre Lane, and mother, Pinky Jones. The Detroit Police Department and Wayne County Prosecutor's Office believe baby Bianca is dead and that DeAndre is her killer. The vehicle DeAndre was driving when he says he was carjacked is found, but no Bianca. A police tracking dog picks up her scent, but then the trail goes cold. The police department brings in a cadaver dog from the UK, and the dog allegedly hits on the scent of decomposition in the vehicle, on the car seat, and in DeAndre's home. But no concrete evidence of Bianca being dead has ever been brought forth.
DeAndre is charged with child abuse and first-degree homicide. The trial is a media circus in Detroit, with DeAndre's character being front and center. The prosecution painted a picture of a man with 7 children from 7 different women and drug possession charges. But does that make him a killer? A man who would kill his own daughter? DeAndre's defense attorney, Terry Johnson, believes that geography and demographics played a key role.
The thing that I find amazing in this is that if they want you, they're going to get you. And what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes we have this naive view of our criminal justice system that everybody is going to be fair, that, you know, the evidence speaks for itself and everyone is on the side of what's right. Coming off of this case, I think my eyes were really opened and I was pretty disappointed, number one, that in my opinion, an innocent man is still behind bars today. A man that's a good father and a, you know, good family man. The other thing that's truly amazing, as I said, is just, you know, the system is flawed. And the system does not want to correct itself, because if the system begins to correct itself, it will begin to implode. And that's not what the system is made for. The system is there to send messages to people. The system is there to punish some people. And unfortunately, if you at times fall into a particular geographic or demographic, it can be a little more difficult for you.
You felt that your character was on trial. How do you feel that you were being portrayed?
I feel like I was being portrayed as a controlling, manipulative, violent, angry black man who was using everybody and didn't love any of his children. But if you look at the evidence clearly goes against that. Everything that the prosecution said feeds into the stereotypes that are placed out there about black fathers and black men in the inner city. But it doesn't stand with the evidence of the situation. Three of my daughters were living with me. Yes, I do have seven children. Yes, I do have seven children by seven different women. However, if I'm a guy who doesn't care about any of his children and who's not a father, why would three of my children be staying with me at the time? Taken care of quite well, fed, going to school and everything. And I'm the one who's doing this. My oldest son, he's either come out and say, like, no, my dad, he's always been there with me. He's always done this. You want to bring up the fact that I have seven children by seven women and attack my character for that? Okay, fine, so be it. But what does that have to do with the disappearance of my daughter? They want to bring up the fact that I wasn't employed at the time. Even though people testify, like, yeah, he didn't have a job, but he did do jobs. Like, I did handyman work. I did landscaping. I did odd jobs. I did anything I could do legally to bring money in, to provide for my family. I did that. And there were people who testified to that.
When you were going back to school.
Because I didn't have a regular and I was going back to school, right. But they try to portray me as this deadbeat criminal. But the evidence doesn't say that.
In the previous episodes, you've heard of various evidence, or lack thereof, and heard from a few witnesses. One of the elements of DeAndre's accounts that both police and prosecutors questioned was what they called the gap in the timeline. The time from when DeAndre says he was carjacked until the time that the 911 call was placed. DeAndre explains his opinion on the discrepancy. They said that there was about a 30 to 40 minute gap in your timeline, giving you enough time to dispose of Bianca's body.
That is just crazy, too. The FBI say there's about a 20-minute gap, 15 to 20-minute gap. It's about 15 or 20 minutes that's unaccounted for. Now, if you listen to Mary and Gary's testimony, they said when I got to the house, it took them about 10 to 15 minutes to calm me down. Also, there's no timetable, there's no definitive timetable of what happened in between the carjacking or between the point of me getting to the house, like how long it actually took me to go there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because I can't even give you an account of that. But what they did do is they had someone walk it, somebody run it, and they tabulated the time and said, well, if you go like this far down, then maybe this is what the time would be. It's still like a 15, 20-minute gap, okay? If that be the case, the 15 minutes is, you know what I'm saying, the 15 minutes is spoken to about the time it took for them to calm me down before they even called the police. There's your 15 minutes right there. However, as the trial went on, this is what the prosecution did. They took every video of a car that looked like the car that I had, and they said, yes, this is the car that we believe to be his car traveling in this direction. This is the direction he said. Now, mind you, all these cars are going in the direction in which I said I was going. All these cars, according to the times that are on the screens, are matching up with my timeline. However, this is what the prosecution is saying. Oh, this clock is wrong. This clock is fast. This clock is slow. This clock is this. But they have no affidavits. They have nobody to come in to say, yeah, this is what, you know what I'm saying, what's going on. Every camera, in their estimation, is wrong. All of this stuff is what they're doing is manipulating the timeline. However, they have no evidence to prove that what they're saying is actually true.
And one other thing I want to talk about that the prosecution brought up with the surveillance cameras and the cell phone data, the prosecution claims that there is about a window of, give or take, 45 minutes that DeAndre's whereabouts are unaccounted for. What is your response to that?
That is not true. There's about a 10-minute gap, and what really happened during that time frame is Mr. Lane was out looking for his kid. He's running around with no car trying to figure out, you know, where his kid is. So there may be a 10-minute gap in there. That 45-minute gap that they talk about does not hold water whatsoever.
DeAndre, let's talk about the alleged murder weapon. The, for lack of a better term, loofah on a stick.
Okay. What happens is it's a stick, and they, like you said, it has a loofah on it, and then it has a pad taped around it as well. And I would use that. Like, I wouldn't even I would like slap it on the table or hit the wall, you know, say when I wanted to get somebody's attention, or I would spank them on their hands or on their bottom with it, you know. And if you look at the thing, it's like they try to make it all menacing and this, that, and other thing, and they try to say, oh, yeah, beat them to death and this, that, but they found no blood, no traces of DNA that belonged to anybody outside of me, you know what I'm saying, on that thing. And nobody ever said that they ever saw me do anything malicious or beat my child with that, you know. It's just, it was a tool of discipline. The whole idea of this whole abuse thing was just something that was propagated by the prosecution for them to have a good storyline to be able to get a conviction. There is no proof that anything like that ever took place from any one of my children, let alone beyond. So, like I said, when you're dealing with stuff like this, it's easy to point a finger at somebody and then create a story and say, yeah, this is what happened. But for people to actually believe that without proof, that's what does a disservice to our justice system. Because like I said, there has never been any proof, period. No CPS cases against me, no witnesses to any kind of abuse or anything like that. Not even any of my children coming forward saying, yeah, I was this, that, and the other thing, and this, that. It's none of that. None of that. Even the people that have been in the homes and the people that have seen me interact with my children, nobody has ever came forward like, yeah, I seen him abuse a child, any child. So, like I said, to me, I said this during court. I said this is a story that was been put together by the prosecution for the sake of getting a conviction. But nobody on that stand ever said, yes, I witnessed this, or yes, I saw this, or yes, I was a victim of this. Period. So where do you get it from?
Before DeAndre was even put on trial and convicted for the murder of his daughter Bianca, another witness came forward. This witness's findings and statements would be shocking, intriguing, and still a mystery. Patrol officer Nikki Gibbs spent 14 years with the Detroit Police Department.
What did you know about the missing persons case of Bianca Jones?
When Bianca Jones came up missing, abducted, the 2nd of December, I didn't know much about it.
So it wasn't something like, you know, in your morning briefings before you head out, it wasn't something where your commanding officer, your chief, you know, said, hey, guys, just a reminder, be on the lookout for this kid.
Never that. Never. That is something that DPD didn't do. No.
Miss Gibbs recounts what she saw on December 10th, just days after Bianca Jones is reported missing. But remember, law enforcement thinks her father, DeAndre, has murdered her. We have redacted the address and the resident's name for safety reasons.
We were on routine patrol. We were dispatched to a fight, people fighting. And it was sister who answered the door. And I stated to her, you know, who I was, introduced myself and my partner. And she said, well, maybe it was my sister who called the police. She goes and comes out, and she was shocked to see us. So we have no clue where that call originated from. And it was about some unknown persons come to her residence and begin to fight and argue over a two-year-old. I had no clue of who these people were. And, you know, I was kind of baffled. My partner, she was baffled. And I said, well, where is this two-year-old? And she was in the bedroom asleep until she came out. And I recognized, well, I didn't recognize her at the time, but she came out the room. And my sister was the one who went and picked her up and put on her lap, and she held her. And, you know, the two-year-old seemed so calm and as if she knew the person. I mean, you know, it wasn't a big fuss or anything. It was just she laid her on her chest with this distinctive hair that was braided into cornrows with beads on the end. And, you know, at the time, I'm thinking, as I'm standing there, I'm thinking, I know it's a kid missing. but I don't know what she looks like. And I can't remember her name. And I asked Patrice Hall, what was the kid's name? And these were her exact words. Dial. And I thought,
wait, what was the name she said?
This is what she said. Dial. She began to say one word, one name, and corrected herself to Dow. And I thought to myself, who in the hell mispronounced their own grandchild's her name? And the child never turned around when she called the name out. And I said, okay, that was kind of odd. And I remember asking her, I said, would you rather for me to do a police report? Even though I had no information on who were these unknown persons. And she said, no, I don't need the police report done. I said, well, I would document it on my activity log. And that's how I remember her name. I had my field notes, but I also documented on my activity log and her address. But there was no police report done.
Did they give a description of these alleged people that were arguing about the child?
She said it was at least, oh my goodness, I can't give you the exact number, but it were several people that came to her home and they ended up outside on the front lawn fighting in the snow, because you can tell the snow was disturbed. And they were fighting in the snow on her front lawn. But she couldn't give me the, she said she had no clue who the people were. No clue. And, you know, my thinking, someone had to have known it was a 2-year-old in that house that really didn't belong there. Who were the people that knew? But said it was her granddaughter, which I later found out that that was not her grandchild at all.
So you firmly in your heart of hearts believe that you saw Bianca Jones alive 8 days after her alleged abduction.
I mean, I just knew it was a kid missing. I just thought it was coincidental. But once I learned, I said, wait a minute. That's this kid. That little girl in that house. That's the little girl that's missing. It was my scout car partner who said to me, as we walked out that house and as I was crossing the street, it was she who told me, she looks like the little girl that's missing. And I remember turning back, looking at her. I said, I know there's a kid missing, but I don't know what she looked like. I can't recall her face, and I don't know her name. But I know for certain, you know, in hindsight, looking back, it was her. 100% surety, that was Bianca Jones.
So if you were Officer Gibbs, what would you do with this seemingly significant piece of information?
On the 14th, I went to a homicide detective named Karen Miller, and I approached her in full uniform. Actually, I was working, and I told her what I knew, and she just blew me off. She just pretty much said, she's dead. That's not the only person I told before I walked out of that office. I turned, I told another detective who I'm very familiar with. I told her the same story. She just kind of shrugged her shoulders.
Why do you think that was their reaction? Because it wasn't a random person walking in. It was someone in a uniform on the same team.
You know why? Because that was the 14th. That 14th fell on a Wednesday. I later learned also Karen Miller submitted a fabricated murder warrant to Wayne County Prosecution Office on the 13th. So I came a day late. I was just like the police, I guess. I was late. And how do you rescind a murder warrant that you just submitted and you lied on it? So, you know, you have to do everything you can in your possibility. Let me just keep pushing this through. And, you know, that was in December. Mr. Lane wasn't charged. He was not formally charged until March.
Now, this was a bold move for an officer going against the grain. What made you do it? And why stay so persistent and aggressive in getting your message out there in uniform,
too? Because that's
who
I am. That's who I am. You're not going to bully me. I won't let that happen. If I know something, Dondre was a complete stranger. The Lane family and the Jones family were complete strangers to me. I had no clue who they were. It was a very bold move, but I had to let you know, I'm not going to let you sit up there and railroad somebody when I know the truth. You know, there's a lot of officers who's going to sit up there and keep their mouths closed. I wasn't raised like that. It was a very bold move. You know what? And I asked myself over and over again, is this what you want to do? Even Mr. Johnson, Terry Johnson, had told me after we met, and he told me, he said, you know, you're going to get backlash. But I'm like, I don't give a shit about DPD and what they feel about what I'm doing is right. And that's how I felt. I'm trying to tell you something. Investigate it. Do something. And you chose not to. And this is where it has brought us. But, you know, some rules are meant to be broken. Some protocols are meant to be broken. So be it. You don't like it? Oh, well.
The Detroit Police Department never investigated Ms. Gibbs' claim that she saw Bianca alive 8 days after the carjacking. But rest assured, the defense sure did. Also during the trial, another witness came forward seeing Bianca alive. Can you tell me about that?
Michael Southberry.
Yeah.
I met Michael Southberry through Terry Johnson. I told them him the exact same story. And I never forget, it was September 18th, 2012. Michael Sasberry goes to the house of and I never forget, he calls me on my cell phone and he says, Nikki, you would never guess who I just saw. I said, who, Mike? He said, Bianca. They shaved her eyebrows and she's dressed like a little boy. And I remember taking my phone and I looked at it. I'm like, why is he making some crap up? Like, why is he making this up? I said, well, what would he have to gain to make something like this up? And I said, Mike, are you sure? He says, Nikki, yes. When I mentioned Dondre's Lane, the two women in the house face looked like they had saw a ghost. I couldn't make it over there in that time. I said, Mike, I'm in the middle of something. I just can't leave. I can't stop doing what I'm doing. So what Mike did was he contacted Terry Johnson. Terry Johnson went and got two plainclothes officers. So when Terry Johnson made that location, that is when my scout car partner and I had pulled up late, and they were leaving. And Terry walked down from that house, so we were parked like three houses down. And Terry walked down to the scout car. He stopped on my side of the car without the passenger. And he says, the child that Mike Sasberry saw in this house earlier today is no longer here. I said, well, that was her.
Who was Mike Sasberry, though? Who was he working for?
He was the court-appointed private investigator for the Lane's defense team.
So he had no stake in the game. You know, he's just got to do his thing.
His job, exactly.
Defense attorney Terry Johnson is still baffled at how Nikki Gibbs and Mike Salisbury's claims were, for all intents and purposes, dismissed.
Let me put it this way. The treatment that Ms. Gibbs received after bringing that information forward, she was treated worse than a criminal defendant by her own department. Her name was basically drug through the mud. There were other things that were done to her, all because she said, hey, I believe I saw this girl. And I have never seen a department work so hard to discredit a witness as they did one of their own. That was really amazing to me.
Did you believe Ms. Gibbs' statements and her recollection of seeing Bianca alive at this house?
Absolutely, I did. The interesting thing is we had an investigator head over to that direction, and the investigator pretty much said the same thing to me. He believed he saw what was Bianca Jones. He said the only difference was, because if you talk about Bianca, Bianca had very distinctive eyebrows, right? And my investigator told me that it looked like somebody had shaved these things off and they made a little girl dressed to look like a little boy. And why would someone do that? Miss Gibbs stated, I know what I saw. Everybody knew what they saw.
What would DeAndre think of Miss Gibbs and Mike Salisbury's claims of Bianca being alive?
You have former Detroit police officer Nikki Gibbs saying that she saw Bianca alive. And then you also have a court-appointed private investigator also saying he believes that he saw her alive about 8 months later.
Here it is. Oh, my goodness. That was just towards, like, this is another, that just was crazy. This whole trial was just crazy to me. But when you hear a Detroit police officer, a veteran of the force, come in and say, I saw that little girl at this house. She said, I saw this girl at the house. She was like, I remember, like, I hear her, and I know she's telling the truth. I know she's being honest. She's like, I don't know this woman. Me and this woman don't have no connection. She's a Detroit police officer. She has every reason to side with her, you know what I'm saying, to support the people that she worked with. But here it is. She's going against the grain, and she's saying, no, I saw that girl at this house. I told my superiors. And then here it is. You have the Detroit police saying, oh, we did everything in our power to search for her. But you get this information, but you don't go to this house until 8 months later. How is that you're doing everything in your power?
Like, and then talk to me about Mike Salisbury. Talk to me about what he saw.
Mike Salisbury, he said he saw the same thing. He's like, I saw the little girl at the house. You know what I'm saying? I believe he said that when he saw her, they had cut her hair to make her look like a little boy.
Kelly, there are now four witnesses that claim to have seen Bianca alive after the prosecution says she was dead. DeAndre's nephew, Travion, who said she was alive the morning of December 2nd. DeAndre's roommate, Lisa, who saw her alive in her bed that same morning. Former police officer, Miss Gibbs, who claims to have seen her alive just days later, and a court-appointed private investigator also testifying that Bianca was alive September of 2012.
You are correct, Melissa. Now, I've been working in this case for the last couple of years, and with the help of Miss Gibbs, have uncovered yet another possible witness. It's a gentleman who I will not name, but he made a report to the Detroit PD on February 2nd of 2012 of a possible sighting of Bianca at the area of East Bethune and Custer Street. Now, I'm going to paraphrase the report a little bit, but it states that on February 2nd, he noticed two females, 1'5'3", medium complexion, ponytail, and baseball hat, with a second female, who was 5'4", slim, medium complexion, appearing to be carrying Bianca Jones. The two females attempted to cover the child up, but the person reporting stating he got a good look at the child and the females, and then they all got into a blue Ford Focus.
Didn't Pinky live in the area of Bethune and Custer Street?
She did. Now, I will say that Pinky does have another daughter that was older than Bianca, and Pinky also has a sister. So to be fair, it could have been a case of mistaken identity by this gentleman. But unfortunately, we'll never know, as to my knowledge and in speaking with this gentleman directly, this report was never followed up on by the Detroit Police Department. And we have found yet another witness to seeing Bianca alive. Damian Johnson recalls the morning of December 2nd exclusively to Killer Jeans. So, Damian, let's just start off with December 2nd of 2011. If you can take us back to that day and tell us what you remember seeing.
Sure. That morning, I was dropping my boys off for school there at Best Academy. I was dropping my boys off. I have three boys that were going to that school that time. And I was dropping them off, and when I was leaving out the school, I seen DeAndre pull up and dropping off the children to himself. And I walked over to the car, spoke to him, he gave me a five, and I looked in the car, seen his daughter in the back seat. She was drinking her bottles. She looked dead at me. I seen Bianca. She was head in my face. And I told him bye. He was like, he was going to get his daughter some clothes from her mother's house. That was it. That was the last time I saw them.
When you saw Bianca in the backseat that morning, do you remember anything else, like what she was wearing? Was she looking around? Anything like that?
Only thing I remember seeing was a blanket over her and her drinking a bottle. It was so long ago. I'm not sure if she was wearing a snowsuit or not, but I'm pretty sure it was since it was December. So I'm pretty sure he had her in a snowsuit, and I seen her. All I can tell you is that I know that that baby looked at me, and she had that blanket over. She had that blanket up to her chest, and she had her arms out. She was holding her bottle, and she looked over at me. And I'm not sure if she had on a snowsuit or not, but I know she was dressed bundled warm and was in the back seat. So I can't tell you the colors exactly, but I know that she was bundled up. She had a blanket, or she was in the car seat, and she was drinking a bottle.
Are you 100% sure it was the morning of December 2nd?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I am definitely 1,000% sure that it was the morning of December 2nd.
Shortly after the carjacking, Damien moved out of state. It wasn't until he found out through the internet that DeAndre was accused of murdering his daughter, Bianca.
No, I've been knowing DeAndre for a long time. And I've seen him with his children. I've known his oldest son since he was a baby. Like, our children are family. And I went and did research, and I'm like, wait a minute, how are they going to charge him for murdering? And I seen her alive that morning, stating that he supposedly had killed her the night before. That's impossible. And then I seen her alive that morning. DeAndre told the police that he seen me and I seen her alive that morning, but nobody really called me in for anything during the case or anything. So I didn't know anything of the case until later on, like the details of everything. All I know is that he was supposedly carjacked and his daughter came up missing. Then they were saying that they just put it on him, but I didn't. They were saying that he killed her. I didn't know that that was the case. I was just thinking that they were just trying to blame him for, you know, setting up the kidnapping. Now I'm hearing that he was supposed to have killed her the night before, and that's impossible. Because me and myself personally, the day that he came up kidnapped, I saw her alive. So that's virtually impossible. So now their whole case is gay. Like, how are they going to charge this man with murder and that baby was alive that morning? That doesn't make any sense.
I want to go back a little bit to your relationship with Pinky and with DeAndre. You know, you guys said you go back many, many, many years, and, you know, your kids have been around each other. What was DeAndre like as a father? And did you ever see anything where he would lose his temper or get angry?
Okay, now, here's the deal. A couple of months before that, we went shopping. We got our income taxes. And we were going shopping. And DeAndre was our ride, and he had Bianca in the car. This baby did not want her daddy to put her down for nothing. He was a daddy's girl. He is a daddy's girl. I'm not going to speak on her like she's in past tense because I believe she's still alive out there somewhere. So I'm going to tell you, he's a daddy's girl. That little girl was the toughest little something you could ever meet, and he was a daddy's girl. That man, I see him with his oldest son, and he always was attentive to all his kids, all of them. Despite whatever relationship he had with the mothers of his children, he still tried to be a father to his kids.
Initially, right off the bat, I mean, and this is one thing that always bothered me about DeAndre's case and Bianca's missing person case, is that it went from a missing person to a homicide so quickly.
They already had the person. Listen, this is what it is. They already had a person where they could just throw it on. He had a criminal background. He did a couple of things when he was younger, but nothing on the lines of hurting children. He would never hurt his children, any child. I let him watch my kids. So I know he's a good father. He was a good dad. He was the best he could. You know what I'm saying? He did the best he could. But one thing about it is he was not abusive to his children. He loved his kids. And now he's in prison because they say that his baby was killed, and I know she's alive. I know she's alive out there. And that's the sad part about it. And it said that the police didn't do their job. And then to make it so bad, we have a police officer saying that she saw her. She saw her alive. And they did not want to listen to what she said about her seeing this baby alive. I saw her alive. A police officer who worked with them saw her alive. And they did not want to investigate that because they said, no, we have the person that said that the dog hit on composition. Decomposition. How is that possible? First of all, it's a dog. You have no case evidence. So this whole issue about my boy DeAndre being locked up and serving time for his children is not right. For his baby being abused and killed, he's out there somewhere. And for God's sake, please, somebody help us find this baby. Please, help us find DeAndre.
The prosecution's star witness was Rico Blackwell, who claimed Bianca was not in the back seat of DeAndre's car. DeAndre and Pinky both knew Rico from childhood. And since Damien knows DeAndre and Pinky well, we asked him about Rico. Did you know Rico Blackwell?
No.
So after you saw DeAndre at the school dropping Alondra off and seeing Bianca in the back, he then right. went over to the college, over to WC3, because he had to go file some paperwork. And when he was in the parking lot, he saw Rico, and they stopped and talked for a few minutes. And DeAndre okay. even said, "Hey, Rico, remember Pinky? This is our baby together." Points her out in the back seat, and they continue to talk. Well, when Rico is questioned, and he went on the stand and testified that he did not see BB in the back of the car. All he saw were some trash bags and bags in the back.
Huh? There yep. was no trash bag. Now, hold on. There was no trash bag or anything in the back seat with that baby except her. Oh, my God. See, so you mean to tell me this man is set up there and lied on DeAndre. It was no garbage cans or anything in the back seat of that car next to his baby. First of all, why would he put trash bags and big plastic bags in the back seat anywhere near his baby where they could just lean over? It's plastic. They could fall on the baby's face. You can't breathe. Come on, man. Ain't nobody that stupid.
So you didn't see any bags, shopping bags, garbage bags, anything like that in the back
no.
of the car?
I just saw the baby in the back seat. That's the only thing I seen. And he told me he was going to get her some clothes from her mama. That's the only thing I seen.
Pinky said in her interview with us, and it was something that really broke my heart personally, was she had said right when it first happened, you know, they immediately thought Pinky and DeAndre had something to do with it. Law enforcement did not feel that we could be victims. Why? What right. was the worth of my child being abducted? And to me, that was so heartbreaking.
So you're telling me that black children are not good enough to be snatched into a child sex ring or anything like that? Like, that's crazy to me. Like, these things can happen to everybody else with black people. Like, how is that possible? So this man can be carjacked, have his daughter taken. Yet and still, nobody is going to lift a finger. They're going to look directly at the dad like he did something wrong. This guy is screaming and hollering and crying about his baby, and nobody is listening. This mother is crying over her baby, and nobody is listening. This is sickness. It is sickness. And this is American, a child in America. Two of these people that speaking up for this child are veterans. Her mother is a veteran. She went and fought overseas for this country and nobody cares? What is this? Is this America? Do we care about our children, about our future? Because they just locked this man up for nothing. No evidence. A dog bark. A dog bark. That's the only evidence you have? A dog bark. So you telling me a dog is more important than a black police officer? A dog is more important than a black parent. A dog is more important than a United States veteran that's fighting for her child to get back. That is not fair. This is not the country we fought for. This is not the country we're supposed to be born in. We're supposed to be able to look to each other. This is the United States. United. It doesn't seem like it's united when it comes to it. Bianca is out there somewhere. DeAndre is suffering. He's a lot behind bars. Not only has he lost his freedom, he lost the opportunity to actually look for his baby. Do anybody realize how hurtful that is? This man is sitting behind bars. His baby is missing. God knows what is happening to her. And he could have been out there an opportunity to try to find his baby. And yet nobody, they took his freedom and took the opportunity of him trying to find his baby.
I'm sure our listeners are wondering why it's taking you 9 years to come forward and admitting that you saw Bianca alive that morning.
I've told several people I've seen her alive that morning, and we have contacted lawyers. Talking to lawyers, they're telling me to fill out this affidavit, which I have. I'm filling it out now. I haven't tried to avoid this situation or anything. It's just that I didn't know much about it until I actually did some research and like, wait a minute, they actually locked him up for his baby being murdered? Like, they actually blamed him for her murder? I don't get that. Like, she was alive. Do you know that Peachy cannot even have a memorial service for her child? Because even if she actually thought that her baby was dead and she wanted to have a memorial service for her, they can't even give her a death certificate because she's still a missing person. How is she a missing person? And her father is locked up for her murder. I'm sorry. This is frustrating me. I swear. And it's angering me every day that I watch this woman suffer because she don't have her baby. She doesn't have her baby. She doesn't have the advantage of watching her child grow up. That's not fair. It's not fair to any human being out there that's listening to this podcast. Think about that. You look at your child right now, and just imagine somebody taking your child, and they blame you, for their murder. And no evidence of that child being dead or anything. And they won't even allow you to either bury your child because they say that this baby is missing. Just the thing that I really want everyone to know that DeAndre is innocent. He has been innocent since this whole situation has occurred. I saw her that morning alive. If that was the case, and they try to state that this man killed his daughter the night before, it's impossible that he killed his baby. It's impossible for him to kill his baby regardless of what day it was, because he was a good dad. A good dad. I've seen him personally interact with this baby. This child did not want her father to put her down. He was a daddy's baby. She loved her daddy, and her daddy loved her to death. He rode around with her almost like Britney Spears with his baby in his lap, driving, because she did not want him to put her down. Know that DeAndre is innocent. He did not do anything that he was stated, and I really wish that the world would start giving the United States justice system would start giving us a fair shot. Like, we are human. We are citizens of this country, and we deserve everything like everyone else. Equality.
Kelly, you have gotten closer than any other journalist who has ever tried to tackle this case. You now have Trayvon Lane, Lisa Dungy, Nikki Gibbs, Mike Salisbury, the unnamed witness, and now Damian Johnson all claim to have seen Bianca Jones alive the morning of December 2nd and after. The only ones that claim Bianca is dead is the prosecution and a dog.
Well, after months of testimony and jury deliberations, DeAndre Lane is found guilty of child abuse and murder. He is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But where is Bianca?
On the next episode of Killer Jeans, we speak with a statement analysis expert who just may flip the switch on your opinion of DeAndre's innocence.
There's just so many... a lot of blatant deceptive indicators that it's very clear to me she was not in that car, or she's in that car, but she was deceased.
A no-body homicide expert breaks down how a case like this gets a conviction.
So they must have believed that they had a better than 50% chance of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, all I can say is if I look at this in the pantheon of nobody murder cases, it's definitely on the weaker side of evidence.
Because she told me what happened. She told me, she was like, look, I went to get questioned by the police. They told me that they were going to take my daughter from me if I didn't say what they wanted me to say. So I said some things that weren't true. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why would you do that?
We want to tell you about a new hit podcast, Murder in Alliance, from Maggie Freeling and the Obsessed Network.
In the tradition of podcasts like Serial, Murder in Alliance is a real-time investigative podcast uncovering the truth behind the murder of 26-year-old Yvonne Lane in Alliance, Ohio.
On April Fool's Day in 1999, the young mother was murdered in her home while her children slept.
The murder was brutal. Yvonne was nearly decapitated. It was almost certainly committed by someone she knew.
Her ex-boyfriend, David Thorne, was convicted of the murder and sentenced to life without parole, but he couldn't have killed her. More than 10 witnesses saw him two counties away at the exact time the murder was being committed.
Now, 22 years later, Maggie and a team of private investigators with the help of Jason Baldwin of the West Memphis Three are on the ground in Alliance, tracking down witnesses, uncovering new evidence, and learning the secrets of the town where nearly everyone in Yvonne's life had a motive to kill her.
And they are reporting this story in real time.
Join Maggie and Jason on their quest for the truth as they seek justice for Yvonne Lane.
Find and subscribe to Murder in Alliance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Murder in Alliance. Check it out wherever you listen.